You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulikin. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My co-host, as always, Tovin Lepan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. Today, we're talking food. Our guest is longtime Las Vegas food writer, Brock Radke, who is currently the food writer for Las Vegas Weekly. Brock, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you talk a little bit about why we started looking at downtown food? If I recall, the genesis of the piece was the lack of downtown food.
Yeah, downtown has really surged in recent years as a nightlife area, a place where people go to bar crawl and experience all the different venues that have popped up, mainly around East Fremont in the last few years. But the restaurant development has not followed suit. It's not comparable to the bars. There's far more drinking venues than there is eating venues. And
why did that occur, do we think?
I can't. Why did the nightlife? Why did the bars occur?
Why more bars than? I mean, we know why there were bars. In part, was the city had made it much easier and cheaper to get a liquor license. But why didn't food grow with the food scene grow with the bar scene?
I think specific to Fremont East, there's just not the building space to accommodate restaurants. Those buildings are old, and even the bars that do exist there and are doing really good business, like Insert Coins, the video game bar, the person who created that venue has spent I don't know how many dollars to turn that place into something that could eventually become his video game bar. So to build a kitchen into a space like that would have been incredibly expensive. Also, you know, there's just not the residential boom downtown has not yet begun. Let's say there's not really enough people to sustain going out to eat every day for lunch and dinner.
Mm-hmm. But we do suspect changes on the way. So tell us about that. What is coming?
So the energy that exists downtown now with Zappos moving down there in the next year or so has really kind of developed this buzz about restaurants as well, and people are excited about places that are coming. We're seeing a lot of already established restaurateurs get interested in the area. There's always rumors of celebrity chefs. Oh, I saw a celebrity chef downtown. Who knows if he's going to open a spot down there. Just in the last few weeks, Michael Morton, who's kind of a legendary name in the restaurant business.
His father created the steakhouse.
Right, the Morton Steakhouse is out of Chicago, and he's been, you know, he created the Nine Group, which has venues at the Palms. And he also has a restaurant at Wynn, so he's going to be opening a Mexican restaurant on Fremont and 6th. And there's just a lot of kind of behind-the-scenes stuff going on, and that's what we tried to encapsulate in our piece this week.
Mm-hmm. And the Downtown Project, which is the nonprofit urban renewal group associated with Zappos and its CEO, Tony Hsieh, they're investing in several new restaurants. One of them is Eat, EAT. Talk about that a little bit.
Eat is going to be a breakfast and lunch cafe operated by Natalie Young, who is a veteran chef in Vegas. She's most recently she opened the PJ Clark's restaurant and the Forum Shops at Caesars. So she's definitely a kind of a grinder type of chef that really gets in there and knows the business and knows how to run things, and that's a great addition to downtown, and she's really excited about being able to create her own concept and do this kind of warm, welcoming, comfort food, and particularly because it's breakfast and there's not really anywhere to eat breakfast. I mean, if you go downtown for breakfast, you're
stuck in a casino.
Oh yeah, you got to go to a coffee shop, or you know, if you're feeling real risky, you can go to do a breakfast buffet somewhere in a casino.
Mm-hmm. You can go to Pars, right?
Downtown Project also has linked up with a famous pizzeria in New York.
Yeah, I don't know if it's super famous, but it's a place called Slice, and it's kind of it's definitely something new for Las Vegas. They focus on organic ingredients and things like that, and they just have some interesting toppings. But it's really, if you can imagine that pizza could be healthy, that's what they're doing there. And they have some different flavors and like Indian accents and Asian accents and different things that we don't really see
things
on pizza
that should
very
not
much.
Be done to pizza.
Right. Well, that's one way to put it.
No, I'm just kidding.
Pat, we should say Patrick's not a big pizza fan.
A big pizza fan. Maybe they'll have some pizza that I.
Who? How can you not be a big pizza fan?
I like to tell people that I have a mild gluten allergy, but other people tell me that's just an excuse I have. But
I think Slice does gluten free pizza crust. So you may be in
love. I'll try to like it. So how do you think that, what's the outlook for these places? I mean, the numbers on restaurant failure are staggering.
Right.
But how do you evaluate their odds?
I think a place like Eat, with when you know the chef who's going to be in charge of that, I think that's very promising. But
she's experienced. She knows food cost and she knows
Vegas. And I think the downtown
and
audience
you
is
were
gonna,
also what you mentioned was no there's no breakfast spot. I mean, there's no
right.
hangover.
Right.
Here.
She's filling a niche. Mm-hmm. I'm a little skeptical about the way that, you know, if Downtown Project, it seems like they're kind of open to anyone's ideas. Kind of anybody could come in there and pitch a restaurant concept, and if it sounds good, maybe they'll finance it. And I know that they're very big on passionate people, but the restaurant business is really hard, mm-hmm. really difficult to succeed. And if you don't have that experience, then you're pretty much throwing some money down the toilet. So mm-hmm. hopefully, new fresh ideas are great, but that doesn't necessarily translate into business success, of
course.
You're
skeptical. So one thing that I thought was that, you know, the advantage of these restaurants opening is that once they're there, they're there. And, you know, at least we have the kitchens and the infrastructure there. And so assuming that we have more residents downtown, there'll definitely be some kind of food scene, even if it's not these particular restaurants.
Right, right. And that's a good point. I mean, the more... we see that all around the valley now. Restaurants fail, little neighborhood restaurants fail, but then that becomes a turnkey space for someone else to come in and give it another go. So hopefully that'll continue to flourish downtown.
And you talked about filling niches, and I was just wondering do you think downtown needs a little bit of everything, or do you think there's certain niches that where somebody could come in and be really successful if you know they do a good job and fight through some of those pitfalls that restaurants always hit?
I think just generally downtown does need a little bit more of everything, but I think the downtown eater, let's say, is a hard to define thing. You know, when you get into the suburbs in Las Vegas and you see all the the Claim Jumpers and the Applebee's and those kind of franchise restaurants, they make sense out there because that's the kind of the dining attitude of that area.
Soulless. No, I'm just kidding.
I just don't know. I think that identity downtown for the people who live downtown now and are going to be moving downtown is kind of yet to be defined. So it's hard to
say
exactly what niche will be filled.
I mean, right now they work at Zappos. They live in the suburbs very often. There's a Claim Jumper right near Zappos, mm-hmm. actually. Okay, anything else on downtown? What's your dream downtown restaurant?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say I am excited about, there's a concept coming from the people behind the Mundo restaurant, and they're doing a...
That's at World Market Center.
Right across from the Smith Center. And they're doing a restaurant in Art Square that's going to be kind of small plates, kind of a drinking, kind of a tapas kind of place, you know, mm-hmm. kind of
Art Square, new development by Charleston and Maine.
Right. I'm excited about that one. I think that's a really good fit for that particular neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I like the food at Mundo a lot, so I expect good things from that.
Okay. Let's move off of downtown and talk about other food developments. Tell us about your new favorite spot in the valley.
Oh, my new favorite restaurant in the neighborhood would probably be a Japanese noodle house called Inaba. It's on Desert Inn and Decatur, and it's kind of in a relatively nondescript shopping center, like a Vaughn supermarket center. And there's been a lot of really good Japanese food popping up around town. Most of it is kind of centered on Spring Mountain Road, but this is a little bit farther away, and it's my favorite spot. It's just a really comfortable, casual spot, and the food is very light. And
Tell us about it. What are some of your...
Well, they focus on like soba noodles, and Japanese food is kind of, compared to other Asian foods, it's very plain. Like the flavors are very clean, and there's not a lot of crazy you know, you think of Japanese food, you think of sushi rolls with crazy mayonnaise sauces, and that's not really what Japanese food is. So
that's Americanized.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So we're getting a little bit more authentic Japanese restaurants now, and this one really just kind of puts the best ingredients in front of you and doesn't mess with them too much. They have some sushi and sashimi type dishes, but it's just really, it's kind of Japanese comfort food, simple stuff.
Why do you think, you said there's a proliferation of some good Japanese restaurants lately. What's bringing this about?
There's a specific ownership group that had some success with some restaurants, and they just continue to build off of that.
Here or elsewhere?
Here in Las Vegas. There's a small, very small strip mall on Spring Mountain Road that's called Seoul Plaza, and that's where you'll find Raku. That's an izakaya, or like a Japanese pub, Manta, which is a ramen noodle shop, and Kabuto, which is a very authentic sushi experience. These places are all kind of aligned together, and that's really helped build the quality of Japanese food here. But really, Asian food in general seems to be booming in Las Vegas right now, and Spring Mountain's definitely the center of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and what about on the Strip? Any new places that you're hitting up on the Strip in terms of what's new?
Yeah, probably the latest big opening on the Strip would be the Gordon Ramsay Steak at Paris, Las Vegas. Things are kind of slow on the Strip right now. There hasn't been a lot of new big openings, but that one's pretty huge. The food's really good there, of course. It's a really famous name. But I think deserving of the high. Very expensive, of course, though.
Really high-end and kind of and pretty rich food.
Definitely. Kind of traditional steakhouse stuff with a little bit of British flair, mm-hmm. which probably doesn't sound good. British food doesn't sound like a good thing.
Steak and kidney pie.
He's doing, like, fish and chips and, like, yeah. Beef Wellington, which
but there has been
I didn't know anybody eats that anymore. But
there's
really
been a food
good.
Revolution in London, though, right?
I don't know. I never go. I'm stuck here in Vegas.
So there's no end also for Vegas's, I guess, appetite for steakhouses on the Strip, right? I mean,
no, it doesn't.
Plenty of steakhouses.
It doesn't seem like it. In fact, the Caesars company, you know, Paris is a Caesars casino. They've opened 3 pretty high-profile steakhouses just in the last 6 months, so I don't think anyone's getting tired.
What are the others?
The others are Center Cut Steakhouse at the Flamingo, and then earlier the Old Homestead Steakhouse at Caesars Palace.
And Ramsay's the meanie on television, right? Tell
he
us
is.
About him.
He's become famous for yelling at people, really. But I think people forget that he's an award-winning chef, and he has restaurants all across the world. He had this kind of restaurant dynasty before he had this celebrity TV show dynasty. So the guy can cook, and his restaurants are good.
Wasn't his first, I'm not saying he can't cook, but just that his first famous act was throwing a critic out of his restaurant, right? Or something like that?
I don't know. I haven't heard that story.
Okay.
I just think people get caught up in the Hell's Kitchen.
Did he throw you out?
All right, you found it. No. I've never been thrown out. I'm probably the only food writer in town who hasn't been thrown out of a restaurant at this point.
Is that because they don't know what you look like yet?
No, it's because I'm nice.
You recently had a great cover package on the best sandwiches in town.
Right.
With my mild gluten allergy, I also don't really eat sandwiches. But I like the idea of sandwiches. Unfortunately, the cover sandwich, the sandwich place that features that sandwich has had financial problems. Tell us that story.
Right. So there was a sandwich shop called Johnny McGuire's located in Town Square, the big shopping plaza on Las Vegas Boulevard, kind of south of the Strip. And Johnny McGuire's was located near the movie theater there. We picked one of their sandwiches. It's called the Olympian as our cover sandwich.
Well-timed.
Yeah, it's a great photo of a sandwich if you haven't seen it. You should go online and check it out.
And what goes into the Olympian?
The Olympian is full of pretty much everything you would want in a classic sandwich. There's 3 kinds of meat. I think there's turkey and pastrami and corned beef, and they throw it on the grill and get it all sizzled up and kind of caramelized a little bit. Throw it on a big fresh baked hoagie roll with all the required vegetables, a lot of good crunchy vegetables, and it's just a great sandwich. And it looks great on that cover as well. Unfortunately, our issue came out on Thursday. Johnny McGuire's closed permanently on Wednesday the same week. We found that out late Wednesday night when things had already mm-hmm. gone to press and finished up. So
it was the Dewey Beats Truman of food journalism.
Of sandwich coverage.
But, so what is the latest? I mean, they are trying to stay alive.
Yeah, so they are, they've been in the process of launching a food truck, a Johnny McGuire's food truck here in Las Vegas, and that truck exists. I've seen it. They're just getting licensed and all that stuff right now. And I just heard today, actually, that they're going to be at First Friday. I think that's August 3rd. So finally, all the people who saw that cover sandwich will get a chance to eat the Olympian and go down to First Friday.
They can find the truck.
Yeah, and they're also planning another, what was going to be their second location, in the southwest part of the valley, kind of like Tropicana and Fort Apache, and they're hoping to open that store by the end of the year.
Okay, so they were closing at Town Square, but opening in another part of the valley. Town Square is a tough restaurant, little market there.
It seems like it. That particular area of Town Square where the movie theater is located has been kind of a in-and-out place for restaurants. There's been mm-hmm. a lot of restaurants and good restaurants that, have, yeah. that were, you know, food-wise kind of acclaimed that have closed down. Like there once was Louis Fish Camp. The chef there was is now the chef at a Wynn restaurant. So it's a tough spot. I think it's because the typical, you know, Town Square is a mall is what it is, and maybe people who are shopping at a mall are not necessarily looking for
excellent
a
food,
gourmet
yeah.
experience
yeah.
or
the Brown
to have
Julius
their tastes.
Or Orange Julius, excuse
yeah.
me.
Yeah, well, they've got those too, you know. The
it seems
I think
to me
there's
part
a claim
of the,
jumper actually at Town
there
Square.
There is a claim
like the
jumper,
big franchise
you can smell
stores
it.
Do well. And
I think part of the problem with Town Square is that it has, I mean, it's not a traditional mall. It's outdoor and it seeks to be quasi-urban or something. They even have parking meters, which here's a little secret. You won't get a ticket if you don't fill the meter because it's a private company. But anyway, part of the problem is they don't have the consistent and predictable foot traffic that you would get in a standard mall.
Right.
So you actually have to go kind of seek out those restaurants and those ones. That area you're describing, it's kind of upstairs. It's kind of hidden away.
Yeah, there are a few restaurants and just the businesses in general there that kind of get stuck in some little nook, don't seem to last very long. And now, you know, summertime, you go there in the middle of the day, the place is empty, of course. It's too hot to walk around and shop right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And while everybody's waiting for the Olympian to come back and, you know, in the food truck form and the new location, what are, like, two or three of the other sandwiches on your list that people should go try right now?
So one of my favorite... I'm going to say here, I didn't say this before, but I think my favorite sandwich out of those top 10 sandwiches is from Eddie D's, which is an Italian deli. It's on Rainbow, just south of the 215 Beltway. And Eddie D's used to be in my neighborhood in the Northwest, and then they moved, so I don't get it as much as I'd like at this point. But they have probably the greatest meatball sub in town, and I order mine with broccoli rabe on it, which is kind of a bitter... but rich vegetable, sautéed vegetable mix.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's probably
is it the meatball or the bread or is it just the whole
it's,
the whole
it's
package?
The whole thing. I mean, if you don't eat sandwiches enough, obviously. It's always the whole package, you know. It's always uh-huh. the whole being greater than the sum of its parts. So you got to have the great bread and you got to have great, delicious, savory, tender meat of some sort. And then all the flavors that kind of mingle together. And that one is just full of juice and marinara sauce. And, yeah, it's a good one. That's my favorite.
All right, one good. More sandwich?
One more sandwich. Well, I think since Tobin's here, we should take the opportunity to talk about the sandwich that he really discovered in Las Vegas. I had to hear about this one from him. So do you want to talk about that?
Sure. So I did recommend when I found out that Brock was doing a sandwich list, I recommended the Torta Ahogada from El Bitero Tasso, and which is on East Charleston, just east of the 95. So pretty east Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And it's basically the sandwich comes from Mexico, but it's really particular to the Guadalajara and Jalisco area. And it's basically like a really, I guess, what do you call it, like a hard baguette, hard like roll, and then with pierna, which is like pork leg meat, And the whole thing is dipped into sort of a mild salsa, which is why it's called the torta ahogada, which literally means the drowned sandwich. And then you put some marinated onions and some a spicier salsa, some lime on it. It's a great hangover cure. And so I recommended it, and then I stepped aside. But Brock did include it on his list, but I was really happy with that.
It's pretty awesome. It definitely needs to be tried. And that was one of the things we wanted to do with that list, is kind of pinpoint some smaller places around town that you may not have heard about before that are worth a shot.
Okay, you're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulikin. My co-host, as always, Tovin LePan, and today we're talking to Brock Radke, a food writer for Las Vegas Weekly. Brock, let's talk about farmers markets, which are a kind of counterintuitive food feature that has popped up in the last few years. When I first heard about it, when someone said, you know, there's a farmer's market in Henderson, I just started laughing because we don't have a lot of agriculture here, and we do have some, but not a lot. So talk about farmer's markets that have popped up.
Farmer's markets have been around Las Vegas for quite a while, but have never really been taken very seriously. And a lot of times you'll go to these little neighborhood farmer's markets, and they're more of kind of an arts and crafts festival vibe to it, and they just don't have the product that you expect to see at anything called a farmer's market. But
if you were in Southern California.
Right. And that's where we're getting most of our, you know, produce for sure. But in recent years, it has stepped up quite a bit. I think the most recent big development is the creation of the Downtown Third Farmer's Market. And that's operated by Carrie Claspy, who's a purveyor and kind of finds a lot of great produce all up and down the California coast, and has been bringing it to chefs and restaurants on the Strip for years, and now she's expanded, and she's running two different farmers markets, actually that one, as well as the Bed on the Farm market, which is held at the Springs Preserve. So you're getting just a much higher quality of vegetables.
She's actually in the business of getting the best ingredients for Strip chefs
exactly.
who demand the best.
Absolutely.
And so she's the type of purveyor we should trust.
Definitely.
Okay. And so you go down there?
Yeah, what makes the Downtown Third market unique also is that it's held indoors. It's held, it's held indoors and outdoors. But it's a former bus depot, actually, that the city kind of turned over to the developers that are taking.
They built a new bus, the new transit center, as we call it, by the new city hall. Right.
So they took over the space, which is great because, another reason why farmers markets seem insane in Las Vegas is because it's too hot once again. So to be able to kind of spend time browsing these different market, different farms and people that make different kind of gourmet food items without having to die in the heat is a unique thing to Las Vegas. And just quality-wise, there's not a farmers market that has better stuff.
And what kind of stuff are local producers making that you can get at these farmers markets, I guess particularly the Downtown Third one?
In my experience, it's a lot of prepared foods. Like you'll get different things like salsas or sauces, or there's a lot of local bakeries that are at the farmers markets. Most of the produce people who are selling fruit and vegetables come from Southern California or surrounding areas. But there are some small farms in the area. There's a farm, the restaurant Nove at the Palms has its own farm, actually, in Pahrump. There's two very small farms out there, and they get a lot of their vegetables just from that one site. And I think they're actually doing pork now. They're doing raising pigs out there as well.
Oh, that's cool.
So there is some kind of stuff out in the outlying areas that people don't really know about.
Mm-hmm. I also understand that, there's dates, almonds, some of the stuff that grows in the Middle East. They also are growing that.
Yeah, the China Date Ranch, which I'm not exactly sure right where that is, but it's about an hour outside of the valley. They're always at the downtown market as well.
Okay. Let's again turn to California, which recently banned foie gras. First of all, how would this impact restaurants here, if at all? And secondly, would this perhaps create a space for people to produce it here?
Right. Foie gras is a specialty product. You know, it's fattened duck liver. and it's made by basically overfeeding these ducks until their livers expand to many more times their normal size. And then we slaughter those animals and take those fattened livers.
You make it sound so
cool. Create delicious foods. I don't think that the foie gras ban in California is going to have a tremendous effect on restaurants in Las Vegas, other than we might have more California visitors who are hungrier for it because they can't get it in their home state. But Las Vegas is a place where people come to eat and they come to get whatever they want, and we're not going to see any kind of similar ban in Nevada anytime soon. There is a company called Mirepoix that was based in Northern California that was, they're distributing foie gras. They weren't, it wasn't a farm of any kind. And they have moved to Nevada. They're opening, and they're actually opening retail stores to complement their online sales. They're planning to open retail stores in Reno and in Las Vegas. So we could see some of that come over. I don't see if we'll see foie gras farms in Northern Nevada. I'm not sure if there's the right kinds of places to do that. But I know that there are people who are looking into Nevada as an option since they can't do it in California anymore.
Let's step back, and I want to ask you how the recession, which is now entering its fifth year, has changed the food scene here. Just kind of a broad question, but see if you can tackle that.
I think that it's, there are always restaurants closing. That's part of the restaurant business. Many of them, most of them don't survive the first year of business. So it's hard to say whether or not there have been a lot more restaurant closings because of the recession. We have had some notable restaurants closing. Rosemary's in Summerlin comes to mind. That's a, decade old fine dining neighborhood restaurant that was everyone's favorite, and that closed a couple of years ago.
Right.
So it's, it's tough business, and it's been a lot tougher, but it's also had the effect of changing rents out in the neighborhood. There's a lot of small spots available now, obviously, and there's a lot of places where the rent is not that high. So if there are people looking to get into the business, then now's a good time, but now's an interesting time to take a risk on an opportunity like that. And we're seeing that happen. We're seeing a lot of chefs that come here to work on the Strip and want to open their own neighborhood venue at some point. This is kind of a friendly atmosphere for that to happen right now.
Now suddenly they have an opportunity that they might not have had 5 years ago.
Right. An example of that would be the Bread and Butter Cafe, which is in Henderson, close to the Anthem area.
That.
Yeah, very, actually another entry on the top 10 sandwich list there.
Another sandwich.
But that chef had worked on the Strip for many years, most notably at Bouchon, and he's just a great baker. And he went and opened this restaurant with basically no money and no equipment. When he first opened, he was running breakfast and lunch on just a series of panini machines, basically pressing sandwiches for people. So.
And it's doing well?
It's doing very well, and he's actually looking to expand, so.
Well, that's good to hear. We want to thank Brock Radke, Las Vegas Weekly food writer, for being with us today. Our producer is Steven Zeller. Thanks to him. My co-host is Tobin LePan. I'm J. Patrick Kulikin. You've been listening to Neon Eden on KUNV 91.5.